Are you looking to get away? Get out of the hustle and bustle of city life? Go up to a place where things are a little more casual. Some would say a little rustic, and everybody would say a little moldy. Welcome to the Mountaintop Motel, where vacancy is always in style. I don't like that. Where vacancy. Where vacancy is always above board. Audio. Wink. People are dying to stay here. Come and find out why. Mountaintop Motel. Come for the art and stay for the roaches.
For the complete lack of mountains.
Welcome to the New World Pictures Podcast. We're going to talk about every movie released by New World Pictures. I'm Ryan. With me, as always, is Mark.
I would not stay at that motel.
Who would? And Erica.
Timber! Watch out for falling trees!
They really can make an absolute mess of the entire city infrastructure. What a mess. This is December, where we always talked about horror movies. This time, it's December 2, Sleigh Bells Ring, where we're going to talk about nothing but slashers for the entire month of December. So we're hoping you're ready for that. And we're not going to do this alone. No, no, no. We have a guest. The guest. The boss is here. The host of The Disconnected and the boss at Someone's Favorite Podcast Productions Podcast Network. That's someone's favorite. Yes, Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network. Ryan Verrill is with us, everybody.
I was told there'd be mountains.
Oh yes.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh. It's the mountain top. It's the mountain top. They're always just you can't see the mountain because they're at the top. That's why. That's it. That's it. That's it. That's right. Ryan, you are the host of The Disconnected. It's an amazing show. You do two shows basically a week. Tell everybody about it. Talk to us about your show.
Yeah, I cover film and physical media, and every single Thursday night I go live with all of the announcements that have come out in the week prior for physical media across the world. We bring on a guest, we go over all those, and then we have some sort of film discussion that ends up in arguing and bickering generally. And then usually at the beginning of the week, I post an interview unless I've been too busy, which is a lot this year. But I get a lot of entertainment and physical media industry individuals. I've been happy to have some pretty big directors on there, pretty big owners of boutique labels, other producers that work in the space. And I'm happy to be here. A longtime listener, first time caller, and thrilled to be here and look down from the mountaintops.
You might be the first time caller of all callers, because we've never had anyone call in. So this is exciting. This is really exciting. Amazing.
And just because it's your first time here, you're definitely going to be the first to die. Woo!
Yes! Just a reminder to all the callers, that's you. It is $3.99 a minute, so just keep that in mind as we push forward.
Oof.
But we're going to talk about a particular slasher, a very unique slasher in New World's history. We're talking 1983's Mountaintop Motel Massacre.
Far from the beaten path lies a friendly little inn.
Girl, you better come get your critter before I chop his head off.
Where folks come from miles around.
Hold on. It's so sad to be alone.
Relax and make new friends.
My name's Al.
I'm Tanya.
I'm Bill McWoolley.
Nevin Crenshaw.
This is my cousin, Chrissy.
Relative?
Cousin.
Are you okay, man, Revan?
Sorry.
Crenshaw?
Evelyn?
Tell your little wife I'll have a surprise for her.
Where no one ever complains.
You mean we got to go down there after her?
We have to.
And get my ass killed by some old crazy white woman?
No way, Jose.
Where people are dying to get a reservation.
Hello?
And any moment might be checkout time.
I'm getting out of here.
Is this any way to run a motel? You bet your life it is. Mountaintop Motel Massacre.
That's right. 1983's Friday the 13th. Sorry, no. Mountaintop Motel Massacre. A.K.A. Mountaintop Motel, A.K.A. Horrors at Mountaintop Motel, brought to you by Old Crow Whiskey and Vienna Sausages. Nothing starts a friendship off right more than Old Crow and Vienna Sausages, the perfect combination to kickstart bonding with a potential new best friend. The next time you meet a potential friend, don't forget the whiskey and wieners. Now,
there's gotta be a better way to say that.
No, that's it. That's how they sold the product. We're talking about Mountaintop Motel Massacre. Ryan, have you seen this before?
Yeah, I'd seen this when Vinegar Syndrome put this out on Blu-ray back in 2019, mm-hmm. and somehow immediately forgot everything about it. So it was nice watching it again for this.
It's forgettable.
This
it's forgettable.
Didn't stick in your memory, this movie?
For some reason, I did not equate it to a bunch of old people staying in a motel and getting massacred. But here we are.
This movie is directed and produced by Jim McCullough Sr., who also directed New World's Aurora Encounter, and was
I
a regional.
I cannot wait till we get to that one.
Let's get it right set up.
It is. It's a chef's kiss.
We'll get to that one eventually. He also he was a regional filmmaker in Louisiana, where he had set up his own production company, Jim McCullough Productions. That was after he attended UCLA, and he had produced 1974's Where the Red Fern Grows and 1976's Creature from Black Lake, the latter of which he produced with his son, Jim McCullough Jr., who would write most of the movies his dad directed, including this one and Aurora Encounter. Jim McCullough Jr. also produced Teen Vamp, which was shot also in Shreveport, Louisiana, much like this film, and which we talked about on this podcast. Ryan, have you seen Teen Vamp?
It's been a long time, but I would love to see a good release of that coming out soon.
So would we. Though, you know, it's on our YouTube channel. You can see Teen Vamp there. And it's VHS ripped glory, and it is there's times in that movie you just can't quite see what the heck's happening, but that's all right.
Yep.
But back to McCullough Sr., this was his second film as a director, and as he told the Shreveport Journal in January of 1983, he said, "We think we're more like Psycho than Friday the 13th. There are lots of different types of scary movies. We've done a scary picture where the characters are in danger. There's a rainstorm. It's an isolated group. The story is about how they handle themselves. It's an intense story."
Glad they're talking themselves into it.
There's so many mixed signals that we're getting, because when you listen to the trailer, it sounds like it's a little bit of a black comedy mixed with the slasher. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, there's some yucks in there. Although I don't remember those yucks coming fast and furious when you're watching the movie. So when those jokes happen, you're like, well, wait, why was that joke inserted in there? Mm-hmm. And then he's saying that it's a really intense slasher movie, which it's none of these things all wrapped up in one.
How could it be intense when your killer is an old woman? She's just shuffling through those
underground
corridors.
Think about how intense it is that an old woman has to just kill everyone because she just wants to be left alone and garden.
It's so true.
I don't know if it's actually too early, but can we bring up the tagline already? When you have a tagline on the poster that says "Don't disturb Evelyn, she already is," mm-hmm. that is so gold, but not for this movie.
Yes.
Right. That's a great point.
That is the tagline of the New World Pictures release of this particular movie, and we'll get back to more of that later. McCullough Jr., the screenwriter, explained in the same article that he wrote about 6 drafts of this script. And while he admits he did borrow a bit from various other movies, he said that he felt... I mean, he was asked because they were like, seems like you're borrowing from other movies. And he was like, well, okay.
You think?
Yeah. But he said he felt, quote, what I believe is going to be different is we've got 3-dimensional characters. One thing that a lot of films in this genre lack is character development. A horror film is begging for characters you care about. Did we care? We'll find out. This movie stars Bill Thurman. He plays Reverend Bill. He's pretty much the biggest name in this whole film in the cast because he had appeared in The Last Picture Show and Sugarland Express and a bunch of other movies before he appeared in Where the Red Fern Grows and Creature from Black Lake, which is how he meets the McCulloughs. The other actors, including Anna Chapel, who plays Evelyn in this movie, the old lady that kills everyone, they were all local actors, with the exception of Major Brock, who plays Crenshaw, who was a baggage handler for Delta Airlines when McCullough Sr. discovered him.
Okay. Hold on. First of all, how do you discover a baggage handler?
I don't know.
Was he looking down from, 17F and was like, that guy down there, I got to figure out a way to talk to that guy as he's mm-hmm. unloading luggage from the flight?
I would have to think he's on the other end when the bags are coming back, and then he's maybe taking,
I think my scenario is the correct one.
He was
one.
Like, get me on the tarmac. He's hitting, I've got to find
hitting
this,
the glass.
I've got to get this man
he's
in my
just
next
hitting
film.
The glass like, hey, you.
Hey, do you have an agent?
You're going to be a star.
You got it, kid.
he's found all of a sudden those little lights that they have. I just love that that's how he discovered him. And so I don't think he made another movie, and I loved him in this movie, Major Brock, not that we were things we love, but I loved him in this. Here's where you can watch Mountaintop Motel Massacre. It is on Tubi, and as Ryan was mentioning, there is a Vinegar Syndrome Blu-ray, but is it out of print? I don't know how sure it is. I think the standard is probably available. So,
yes.
That's a long license that they have for this particular movie, but
honestly, they may own it outright. Let me see. No, it is sold out.
Okay. Uh-huh. Then it's out of print. Okay. Well, so it's on Tubi, everybody. That's where you can go watch it.
Tubi.
But now it is time for us to talk about what this movie is about. Mark, let's start with you. What is Mountaintop Motel Massacre about?
It's a redemption story. Mm-hmm. Like the director / producer was saying, these are 3D. Funny they said 3D. It is a movie, not a cartoon. But anyway, 3D characters and how, you want to care about them, how they learn from their mistakes. And so this is a redemption story of a struggling advertising guy that makes up a story that he works for Columbia Records just so he can hook up with a couple ladies that are distressed at the side of the road. And then, inexplicably admits it to him that he's not working for Columbia Records, mm-hmm. which I don't know why you would do that. How are they going to prove it? This is pre-internet. They're not going to be able to look you up and know. While they were first turned off by that, all it took was Evelyn trying to kill them for them to learn, sometimes people make mistakes.
Yeah, nothing brings you together quite like a killer.
Okay, Ryan, What is Mountaintop Motel Massacre about?
This is a story about a woman that really hates guinea pigs. And in response to that, goes on a deadly rampage, fighting through these hamster-like tunnels where she encounters a wide array of characters and just wants to make a collection of them. And it doesn't work out for her in the end, but it's a fun story.
It's, you know what?
That's a fun story.
It's a fun story.
Thank God somebody had fun watching this.
Yeah. Everybody was like, you know what? I don't know, but I had fun. Erica, what's this movie about?
You know, some people say that women only get better with age. And shouldn't we all agree that this is absolutely true about Evelyn? You know, she got stronger. She got smarter.
Yep.
She really used her imagination. She used her acting skills. She tried out new makeup. You know, she is really, truly in the prime of her life. And, you know, my heart goes out to her. Being a mom is hard. Kids will really push your buttons. And, you know, some might say she overreacted. I don't know. You'll just have to watch
and
judge for yourself. But yeah, I think, you know,
that'll
she
teach
was
you
just,
to try to conjure dad.
Yeah, she was just a lady trying to do it all, you know, and trying to make the best of the golden years of her life and run a motel
his
alone.
Dad clocked out.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny how we can all see this movie, but we can see something different because I saw this movie about a Columbia record executive who accidentally tells people that he is indeed a record executive when he was not supposed to on this talent search and uses a night of mass murder to cover up his mistake.
It's
he was
the
like,
perfect
oh,
story.
I never should have revealed my true job. Oh, death is happening. Let me smooth this over. I lied.
Still to my point, it's a redemption story.
It's a redemption story.
You know, everyone dies.
Correct.
So he's like, ooh.
God, the relief he felt when he saw that blood. The relief he felt with that missing person. Oh. He was like,
oh, thank God.
That's why when he went down in the tunnels, he just sat in a corner and was like, I'll just wait this out.
I hit my head.
I can just pop out of the end.
We're going to turn to Letterboxd now. Ryan, you are on Letterboxd, correct?
I sure am.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So follow Ryan there.
We have a guest that's actually on Letterboxd?
it's an unusual thing for our guests. They're usually not on Letterboxd, but we are also on Letterboxd, and you can follow us there as well. So here's the Letterboxd synopsis. After several years in an insane asylum, several meaning three.
Yeah.
So I guess more than a couple, but nonetheless.
Well,
several
seems
to
mean
that
would
seems like seven or eight.
A few.
Yeah, a few.
It's more than a couple. Maybe a little more than a few, right?
Seems more than several. I don't know.
But if it was three, I would say a few. Like I don't want to get into the semantics podcast that I do every Thursday night. I don't want to bring that in here. It's been great.
It's the most
guys.
Thrilling
so
4 hours that I've ever that I spend every week. It's just incredible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Correction, Ryan. It's only three hours and 54 minutes.
Thank you, Ryan. Thank you. I appreciate
Look, maybe
that.
It's about language, but also let's be real about the time. Back to this Letterboxd synopsis. Evelyn, the keeper of the Mountaintop Motel, is released and resumes doing business. What business? Just any business? Maybe the business of the motel? I don't... Just business. Okay. And here's... How about this for a transition to the next sentence? She kills her young charge out of anger.
Her young charge?
What?
Her young charge? They're like, This relationship isn't clear to me, the synopsis writer, so... but anyway, she kills her young charge out of anger, but convinces the police it was an accident. She doesn't. She never tells the police anything. She doesn't say anything to the police.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get there. And pushed into insanity, she then proceeds to target her guests, first by releasing vermin into their rooms, but then by using her trusty sickle. Well, we got to the truth by the end, so good job, Letterbox.
All of that is true. She is.
Thank you, God. Mark, this is New World Pictures again. Podcast. Yeah, he's dipping back into semantic cast.
This isn't the semantic cast. Get out of here. Sorry, the semantic cast.
Sorry. Yeah. Accuracy is important. Come on, guys. But from a profitability standpoint, I don't know how she's going to make this motel work if she keeps killing all of the guests. I mean, I have to imagine it has. You have to pay property taxes on it. Well, yeah.
I thought you were going to talk about the fact that it was $7 a night. I was like, you're not going to mess up.
What I was going to say is their TripAdvisor rating is going to be terrible.
There's nobody to give lower ratings, though.
But there's no one to give good ratings either. Wait, hold on. You guys have got me turned around on this one.
Wait. Mark, tell us what TripAdvisor is like in 1983.
It's a ledger. And you can just go to the library and you write in the ledger, I stayed at this motel. It was terrible.
I expected more of like, we're going on vacation in Arkansas. I got to go to the library and check the microfish.
Yeah, very true. That's true. Then you'll see the review of someone that got away. Also, she's not necessarily trying to kill everybody at first. She's mostly just trying to gross them out and so that they'll leave. So she does give them an out.
Like, sure.
I'll put cockroaches on you. You should go.
Mm-hmm. You should, don't stay here, but thank you for paying. We do start with Evelyn in her garden, and she sees a guinea pig and calls to her daughter, or should I say Charge?
Her young Charge.
And when her Charge doesn't come to collect the said guinea pig, she chops it up with a sickle. And it made me think, Evelyn was doing some light gardening with a sickle? What was that tool for? What was she doing with that? This is a tiny little gardening bed. It was not like a full, it wasn't like a big wheat field. What was she doing with that sickle in her gardening?
I felt like she had it for protection.
You never know when that young Charge is going to come up on you.
Yeah, if somebody scares you, you're like, whoop, let me sickle you.
Also, isn't gardening supposed to be relaxing?
That was her at her most relaxed.
Imagine what she's like when she's irritated.
I know we're not at final questions yet.
We're not there yet. But that's way at the end.
How many animals did she chop up before that guinea pig? Because there was a picture downstairs of a pig, and there was a picture of... We'll get there. I'll save it. But
there's the white rabbit that's in the garden.
Sure.
And anyone who has ever had rabbits in their garden... Like, there's no way that rabbit would have just hung out.
Was it a rabbit or a guinea pig?
It looked like a rabbit to me.
Oh, I thought it was a guinea pig.
I thought it was a guinea pig.
It's making a little squeaky.
Yeah. Either way, that thing would have taken off way faster than her.
Have you seen a rabbit before?
This is going to be a 2-hour segment on the Semantic Cast next week.
This is a very special episode.
He's got a zoologist in to explain.
Let's break down the word and break down what this animal looks like, because I really need both.
Mark, so tell me about these pigs from Guinea.
Mark, real quick, is this a bunny? There it is. Mark, real quick, is this a rabbit? Is this a rabbit, Mark? Real quick, what kind of rabbit is this?
That's a guinea pig.
I think my yard has an infestation of guinea pigs. All right. Well, I've got a lot to learn, guys. So we're gonna
learn it from this movie. In any case, her daughter Lori, or Charge Lori, is trying to summon the dad who has passed on, and gets caught by Evelyn, who goes hog wild with her sickle in her little downstairs underground hangout room, just really doing a lot of damage to all the feng shui that she had set up and breaking up the witchcraft shrine. And she then accidentally, or maybe just, maybe she wanted it all along. I don't know. What is rage? But anyway, she slices Lori's throat, which leads to a
Ryan,
very
rage,
long.
Ryan, rage looks like it has two long ears. And it has like a fluffy tail and it has like long teeth in the front. Well,
right, like, right. That's right.
Like,
and
yeah.
Like
that's
every
rage.
Spring he delivers chocolate. I get it. I know.
Yes,
I know.
That's right.
Mark's writing this down. Thank you.
That was the fastest pen and notepad ever.
He's preparing for the next podcast now. Anyway, she slices Lori's throat, which leads to a very long CPR sequence that is only eclipsed by the one that's in For Safety's Sake. That was maybe some of the character development that he was talking about that was in the script, where he really laid out the entire thing that they would do if the ambulance drivers arrived.
Yeah, I felt like the ambulance drivers were the most flushed out characters of the entire
They were
movie.
Very, yeah, I could so see what they were going that. Through and I knew their backstory. We also get a cameo from the director, Jim McCullough Sr. He plays the sheriff. No, the reverend here talks the sheriff out of questioning Evelyn on the day out of sensitivity, but does the sheriff ever get around to asking Evelyn what happened? I mean,
I don't think he ever came back. I think he was like, she's got to deal with it on her own. I mean, she never really liked that charge anyway.
And not to fast forward too much near the end, when one of the girls says, she's killing everyone. And the sheriff says, was it Evelyn? You could see him go, shit, I was supposed to come back.
Oh, right.
Oh, that's what the string is for on my finger.
Evelyn.
I'm so busy with that coffee and sausage and biscuit for 99 cents.
That's why I chose Evelyn69 as my TripAdvisor username.
Whoa, Evelyn69. Yikes.
Yeah, and it was Microfish Advisor. So
right. Oh, sorry. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Come on.
But you still need to tell the librarian what your username is.
and she goes, username? What do you need a username for?
Oh, just so you know, I'm Evelyn69. That's my username. She's like, whatever. Just go use the microfiche, you weirdo.
What is a username?
Oh. Why'd the librarian say nice?
Yeah, sweet. We don't get a lot of jokesters in this library. This is a very serious place. Then we start to flesh out our whole ensemble, okay, because we're getting mostly people that are renting rooms out from Evelyn. And that includes Reverend Bill and also freelance carpenter Crenshaw, who they are in roomed right next to each other. And they're the ones that enjoy some whiskey and wieners and really get into some deep conversations after feasting on said items.
How long you been a preacher anyway?
I've been spreading the good news for now 25 years. It beats the heck out of selling life insurance and Bibles. That's how I come started preaching, you know, selling Bibles. Two Sundays ago, way back to April of 1955, I've saved over 500 people.
But your preaching don't say nothing about drinking, does it?
Sure it does. I don't drink forever. It's a long, slow process. Rome wasn't built in a day, you know.
No, I drunk up in a night.
The kingdom of heaven is someplace up there in the clouds. It's here now in your heart.
If the kingdom of heaven is in my heart, where's the kingdom of hell?
Well, I guess it's there also.
Whoa! Oh, you know what, guys? You're cut off of those wieners. You're getting a little too deep here tonight. I just like that long clip because I really just like to get into Major Brock's performance there as Crenshaw. Because
yeah, do you think he quit his job at Delta?
Oh my god! Or... I hope he ran around to everybody and just told him exactly what he thought of him. He's like, I'm going to be a movie star, and we're just like.
fuck you. I'm out of here, yeah, bitches. Right. And then a week and a half later, he's like, hey.
Yeah, hey. They said the movie's probably not going to come out for a couple more years. So they're like, Major, you took a dump on the on the luggage carousel. Like, that's not... I don't think we can have you back. I just don't...
Like in the part that's in the baggage claim area.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh no.
You're just shitting. Then you peed fuck you Delta out in the snow right outside. It was
anybody could have peed that.
His defense would, of course, just be, you know, listen, I know I'm an employee with a lot of baggage, but that's a plus.
Right. Am I back?
Yeah.
Am I back?
Yeah.
Am I back? Should I get to work now? Should I clock in? I'm back, right? Oh. Let's meet everyone else here that's also hanging out in this motel. There's also the newlywed couple, Vernon and Mary, and Vernon is the one tasked with getting the room.
What can I do for you this evening?
I'd like a room.
Single or double?
Single.
Two of you.
Yes, ma'am. Just me and my new wife.
All right, that'll be $7. Thank you. Room four. Just married. Well, I'll see to it that you're not disturbed. Oh, and tell your little wife I'll have a surprise for her.
Thanks.
Oh, just a moment. Here. In case the lights go out.
I'd imagine the light's going to be out anyway.
Remember in Psycho when Norman Bates was like charming, but maybe there's like a little something off about him? Not Evelyn. She is staring you down the moment you walk in. She's like, mm-hmm. Who are you and why are you here?
It's the opposite though. She's all creepy, but there's a little charming there. Just a little. Like, just a tip.
Maybe she's okay in that like not at all charming veneer that she puts up. Okay, lastly, we got cousins Prissy and Tanya, who have to catch a ride with Al after their car breaks down.
Sure is some car.
Yeah, and look, a telephone. You must be rich or something.
No, nothing like that.
Well, are you a lawyer?
No, but I keep a dozen of them working full time. You girls ever hear of Columbia Records? Well, that's mine. That's my baby.
My God! You must know Barbara Mandrell.
Sure do. Barb's made me a fortune.
I just, he's telling a little fib there. He doesn't work at Columbia Records, as he tells later. In a moment, he doesn't need to have such candor, but he decides, what the heck? I'm just going to tell you the truth.
It was unprompted. They didn't even ask.
Yeah.
She was the best part.
Yeah. He was just like, oh, by the way, we're both being hunted by this crazy old lady. Let me tell you the truth about my life. It was like, wait, now? It was like a confession. He just like, I need to get this off my chest.
But that I did look it up, and Barbara Mandrell was signed to Columbia Records.
Oh. So that
part was okay. True. He did do a little research before he dropped that little nugget on them.
He put on a Barbara Mandrell record and was like, oh, hey, Columbia Records, Barbara Mandrell. Oh, put in the script. By the way, Tammy, who ends up being the final girl, basically by default, she is played by Virginia Loredans, who had appeared before this in the Shreveport Little Theater's production of Dracula prior to this film. This is her first time being on film, much like many of the people that are on this film. And she still would go on to make one more appearance. She'd appear in 1988's Video Murders, which was also done by the McCulloughs. And I do have that Blu-ray, but that was not put out by New World Pictures. That was put out by somebody else, unfortunately. Nearly New World? I don't know.
We dodged a bullet on that
one. Could have been.
I mean, at this point, every single movie is you could argue it's a nearly New World. There's someone who worked with someone who worked at New World with every movie.
Well,
so we have to start drawing a line in the sand.
No, we don't. No, we don't. Mark, there is a new trailer for a new Mission Impossible movie that dropped
November today.
It's Nearly New World. Nearly New World. There is a guy that worked for a guy who worked for Carmen who worked on that movie. I'm sure of it. By the way, Al has one of the earliest car phones in existence in 1983, which when he has to give the number, he has to give a bunch of extra numbers. Does anyone know why he has to do that?
Mark?
Yeah, that was I said everyone, but... Just truly looking at Mark.
Great.
I was like, maybe Mark
doesn't know.
This.
We'll never know.
If Mark doesn't know, then forget it.
I don't remember there ever being a need for other numbers. I do remember at one point in time, our dad had a car phone that was a rotary dial phone. In the center console. It was like a green Chrysler, I want to say. This car, by the way, was like a 81-82 Lincoln Continental.
Oh, okay.
Thank you. Would make sense that you would have a car phone in it because that was, you know, it was a $25,000 car at the time, which is extremely expensive. But that's like during their time when they were doing the bustle backs where you had that little swooping trunk with like the little pop out for what looked like a spare tire or something.
Mm.
And it was totally done for aesthetics just to make it look like a British limousine. But I mean, if you like the look, great. But the problem was because it sloped, it actually made the trunk hold less stuff. So it was actually working against the trunk being as roomy as it possibly could be. It was just all done for looks.
Mark, do you know anyone on your car cast that actually knows anything about early car cell phones? Because that was the question that we had.
did I just go a different direction than you were expecting me to go?
I mean, that is an answer.
And the point of this story is...
It is not the answer to the question, but it is an answer.
Fair.
So that's
fair. I don't know the answer to that question, and I don't think there is an answer to that
question.
That's
okay.
It's unanswerable.
I mean, if there was anyone that was going to know the answer to this question, it would have been you. And if you don't know it, I'll never know it, and I don't care anymore. It's gone. Forget it. But as soon as any of these people check in fact, literally when Crenshaw checks in, Evelyn wants to kill them all. She already puts a snake in a bag as soon as he checks in. But she doesn't use it on him, as I thought she might because of the timing of it. She uses it on the newlyweds room because I guess Vernon had said that joke about not needing a candle. And she was like, well, screw you. You're first. So Vernon does get bit in the cheek by a snake. And you might think, well, he's dead. But even as Al uses that car phone to call a doctor, but he is resilient and don't worry, he is going to hang on for quite some time. This is one of those long drawn out processes that eventually you trip balls at some point.
Yeah. Well, you look like shit.
Yeah. You look
like
bad.
You really look terrible.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so depending on the snake, like if it's certain like rattlesnakes, you need to keep the bite above your heart. And then when you get to like copperheads, you need to have the bite below your heart. And he was doing neither of that. He was just laying flat.
Mm-hmm.
So although logistically, I'm not sure how he would do that. Like
I guess
if he needed, if it was a copperhead and he had to have the bite, which is on his cheek below his heart, he would actually have to be arching back. And hanging with his head behind him.
Yeah.
Which would have been very uncomfortable for the amount of time that he was just chilling out with a snake bite in his cheek.
Well, and Ryan, clearly you haven't listened to Mark's snake cast. Excuse me, Mark's snake cast. podcast, or you would already know all that information. So this is really just repetitive. Yeah. Sorry that you had to repeat it, Mark.
That's episode 9, Copperheads. But also, Erica, just you know, out of respect for that cast, you left out a few S's. So just make sure next time we want to make sure people find
it. We'll talk about that in the semantic podcast.
Thank you. So. Thank you.
Everything. Yeah. It's the Venn diagram of all these podcasts. We somehow are in the middle. I don't understand. So she lets loose more animals, but starting with like rats in Reverend Bill's room and then cockroaches and Crenshaw's. And to me, it felt like, okay, you're using less and less dangerous animals. mm-hmm. Like the snake was very effective and it's poisonous, but like rats and cockroaches, especially cockroaches, are just like, that's gross. Get these off me. But
And Crenshaw dealt with them for a long time.
Yeah. And they're crawling all over his face, which is certainly like annoying and gross. But like, there's nothing that's going to happen to you because you have all those cockroaches.
when they were doing the takes, when that thing was going over his face, he kept flinching. And the director came by and said, "Listen, do you want to go back to your Delta job? Because like this is kind of a make or break moment for us.
I got a taxi just waiting to take you back to the airport, just sitting there, and he's like running.
No. I may have burned that bridge, so I will hold real still when this cockroach gets up into my eyeball. I'm good.
You do not know what I did at that airport. I do not want to go over the details, but I did some nasty things, and I don't think I can return. But yeah, I just thought, are there not other animals that are like, would be, that she could have potentially used that might have been a little bit more dangerous here?
I mean, no more guinea pig.
No.
Yeah.
God, imagine if you're sound asleep and then you wake up and your room is overrun with guinea pigs. I'd be like, I'm so excited.
Just, and like, Mark would say, where'd all these rabbits come from?
Yeah.
Where are these rabbits in here? but you're right, Ryan. Like, they couldn't have put scorpions in there or just something else.
Just something dangerous. It does. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. It kind of, you know, the animal thing, it starts to make you go, well, what's the point? You know, why keep that going? But anyway, Evelyn keeps hearing her daughter's voice, and she keeps telling, that's what she sort of started her on this trip anyway. I'm sorry, her charge's voice, telling her to kill all of them.
Thank you.
Which is interesting because the opening, her daughter was asking her deceased father for help with her crazy mom. But anyway, sometimes we see what we want to see. Here we are. She asked for one thing. She was asking for help. Now she's like dispensing. Now she's making her mom crazy. I'm like, I don't know. What were we trying to accomplish here, Lori? But she does listen to Lori anyway. And she sneaks into the bathroom and to kill Prissy by slashing her across the face with a sickle. To which I would say that is awful and probably going to be very disfiguring for your face. But does that kill you?
Mm-hmm. No, it just no.
I mean,
unless that's
a nasty scar to live with. But
right.
Are you trying to judge if any of us are murderers? Is that how you're trying to sniff it out? Well, I'm not going to answer this question. Uh-huh. I don't have to. Uh-huh. So you'll never know.
Yep. And I notice Ryan is incredibly quiet. So,
I mean, at the top of this mountaintop, they could bleed out at least.
There you go.
That's probably the only way they could die. But she dies instantaneously. It's very, I don't know. So anyway, Evelyn starts dispatching the other guests throughout the motel, though Crenshaw figures out that she's coming through the floor and while sitting on the toilet, which is... you know, where I get some of my best ideas. So this is why I have such a connection to this character. And so he starts nailing, using nails and nails the opening shut in all the rooms. Not that it helps the newlyweds because Evelyn was already in the room. What irony. And that's where we're talking about that particular scene where she gets.
But really quickly back to Crenshaw. Do you think he had already dropped a load when he stood up and then pulled his pants up and started doing handiwork around the hotel? Do you think he was just fudgy button the rest of the movie?
No, he completely cleaned up. He, yeah, No, he
didn't, though. No. He got up, he pulled up his pants. You saying he had the perfect clean pinch?
He did. Yep, he did. he had a perfect poop. And he didn't need to wipe up. And he knew it. He knew it. Because when that happens, you know it.
Wow.
You know it. You know it. You're like, I'm good.
With my luck, it would be, I'd see that little door open, and I'd be like, oh, dude, this is a messy one. I've got to, how do I put a foot down on this side and try to keep the door down while I clean up? Because I'm not getting up off this toilet for at least another 5 minutes.
Because you can easily nail the opening while you're sitting on the toilet in your room, but you're going to help no one else.
Right.
And that's where I would be like, look. I'm going to help everyone else out. I just got to finish this article. I'm so close. So close. I got 3 more paragraphs and then this thing is over. I got to finish this out. And then a quick cleanup and then we'll go help everyone else not get murdered. But it's too late for the newlyweds. Sure. And meanwhile, help is on the way as the sheriff drives into the tree that's in the road. So he eventually does show up, though, and he forces Tanya to get out of the car. That she's in order to show him. He's like, she's murdering everyone. She is? Get out of the safety of this car and please bring me inside to potentially danger and show me all of the murders that are happening.
Well, and to bring me into the only building within this general vicinity of many miles, quite likely.
Right.
Where is it happening? Please.
You show me this murder. You show it to me. You think I'm just gonna believe you? I don't. You show me this murderer.
Because I definitely wasn't up here a few days ago for another possible murder. So you show me where you think the murder was, because if it's anywhere near that kitchen I may or may not have been in a couple days ago when a little girl may or may not have died. I wanna see it.
And then I'm going to push you in front of it, and then it is a double suicide. I was here just randomly at the last minute.
Yep.
Okay, the sheriff does have a showdown with Evelyn, and it's in the tunnels down below in a sequence that actually is a reshoot that was requested by New World because the original ending of the movie, the sheriff just shoots Evelyn, and that's it.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah.
And New World, when they picked it up, said, you got to go do reshoots. So they had to rebuild that whole tunnel in a studio. Erica, it is now time.
Oh, for things we love and things we hated.
That's right. We're going to talk about the things we love and the things we hated about Mountaintop Motel Massacre. Mark, what is something you loved?
I really liked.
Mark?
Loved might be a strong word.
I said loved.
I understand.
Back to the semantic cast with you.
Point, counterpoint.
This semantic, you host the semantic cast, as Ryan just said. My God.
I liked a lot. I highly liked the tunnels under the hotel. I thought that was a cool concept. It could have been executed a little bit better, but, you know, they looked pretty good. And, you know, this is a low-budget movie, and they obviously had to build the set. And it looked pretty good. And, you know, the idea that you had these tunnels under these, you know, the hotel rooms are, for people who haven't seen the movie, they're sort of individual cottages. The fact that she has these tunnels under there and has different ways of sneaking into the rooms was a neat concept. I would argue it could have been done a little bit better. Like, it could have been used more effectively. But I give them a lot of credit for, you know, trying to, you know, for the attempt, I guess.
Sure. Ryan, what is something you loved about Mountaintop Motel Massacre?
Well, like Mark, I liked the tunnels quite a bit. However, I loved the freakout scene when she happens upon her young charge and goes to tear down the witchcraft, because there's one shot in particular. There's a goat bust or whatever. And I swear, as I was like staring in awe at her just random outburst, I swear she punched that goat just out of nowhere, full bore cockback punched that goat in the head. It was, I love that.
I think you're right.
So what you loved the most, like, happened early on and you were like, let's settle in. Oh, No, nothing's hitting. Nothing's hitting like that moment.
Yep.
Waiting for something to hit. Something's got to hit like that early moment. Oh, well. Erica, what is something you loved?
I thought the tunnels were fine. I thought she pretty dramatically lit them for as, you know, out of it as she was supposed to be. They're pretty well lit. But something that I really loved was...
This is something you love, not what you thought of what something Mark kind of liked.
I loved Major's voice. I love Crenshaw's voice. Brock's voice.
Oh, yeah.
His voice was just... It just was so unique sounding. And I loved his character choice, just being very logical and being very like, you know... This is it, and this is what it is, and this is great. And I figured it out. Now I'm gonna go around tell people. I don't know. I loved his. I liked him.
Oh, I love Crenshaw.
I don't know if I want to say love. I loved his voice, but okay. I
dug the whole vibe. I dug the whole vibe of Crenshaw. He was my favorite for sure. Loved him. Just a guy, just a camp carpenter, just trying to get work, staying in a motel, figures he's going to find it somewhere. And as soon as he figures out what's going on, he's packing up his stuff. Forget this, these roaches. I'm out. I'm out of here. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he even calls it out. Like, I don't need to stay here. Yeah. I'm out of here. Screw this. Yeah. I'll sleep in the car.
Yeah.
I've done it before. I'll do it again.
No problem.
Yeah.
I'll put my stuff in the back, sleep in the car. No problem.
I don't mean to go back to the semantic cast, but
oh, Mark, you've had so much free advertising already.
It's a really great podcast. Thursdays at 8 o'clock.
It's live. It's a live semantic cast.
Holy moly!
It's the only way to do it.
Let's switch to things we hated, Mark. Mark, what is something you hated?
I hated that when Crenshaw, he gets his hand cut off and they do a really quick cutaway of the hand still moving. And I hated the fact that I had that hand effect in high school and I don't know where it is anymore.
Oh, yeah.
I've lost it over the years. And I was like, I had that hand.
Mm-hmm.
And so I hated the fact that I don't have that hand anymore.
You had to put a light on it, and we had it right there at Halloween where it would just move, and it was right as you at the base of the front steps, because there was a little step to the side through some bushes, and that hand was right there, and you put fake blood on top of it, and you had to dig the wire, and it took like C batteries or something weird in order for it to power. It was like some odd thing. But then you turned it, and the hand would just move, and we thought that was the coolest thing on earth. We were like, this...
And the reason why I know it's the same one is all it basically did, so you had this rubber hand, there was just a motor in the middle finger that was doing this, that moved the hand. And so that's how I know it's the same one.
Yeah, the same one we had as kids. Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, that's pretty great.
So I hated that I don't have that anymore.
Yeah, that is something to hate. Yeah. Ryan, what is something you hated?
I hated that this felt so much like Tourist Trap and was not, because I like Tourist Trap so much more than this. Something about it works better. It could be the fact that Chuck Connors is just fucking incredible in Tourist Trap, but I think this needed something like that. And when you're leaning away from the tropes like they did in this one, which obviously the budget's the biggest part of that, totally get it. And you got to use all, you know, local baggage handlers that will piss on suit racks, but anyways, when you're using those types,
he pissed on the suit racks.
He did, yeah.
Oh my god, he really did some damage on his way out.
That was the third page of the IMDb trivia. I don't think you read far enough. If you're gonna have to be saddled with this cast, I get that you can't go like what they did in Tourist Trap, but
yeah,
I don't know. I feel like we could have had a better gimmick, I guess.
Yeah, you know, it does feel like ultimately a slasher that half goes there. And I feel like it was their movie before this one is like an old kind of like 19. It's a car movie, you know, and it felt like it's the early 80s. And that's why they decided to do like a slasher, because it was just like, well, that's the thing that people are into these days. but it doesn't feel like this is exactly what they want to do. I think maybe when we get to the Aurora encounter, we might get something closer to what they really want to do. Charge of the Model T's, I'm sorry, it's like a comedy spy film with cars, and that feels like that might have been more up their alley than doing this slasher movie, which doesn't seem like the guy who produced Where the Red Fern Grows is particularly like, oh, I can't wait to murder people in a motel. Like, it's probably not his favorite thing to do. And it kind of, you can feel that. It's like, it doesn't feel like this is a genre, but he's trying to, it's the 80s. Everyone's trying to make one, at least one slasher.
Yeah.
All right, Erica, what's something you hated?
I hated how many different things were going on in this. You know, it kind of opens with the backstory on Evelyn that she was in the psychiatric ward, or I forget exactly how it was worded, but they show you that she was recently released. But then she hears the daughter's voice. The dad is not in the picture, but he's introduced as if he might be in it.
Right.
And then the daughter sort of stays with her, but that sort of tapers off and falls apart until the end. Then she comes back in true ghost form. It's just, yep. There's so, and then the releasing of the critters and the animals and the sickle, there was just so many different pieces and elements. I don't know. Is it that she hears voices or not? Is it that she's,
right,
you know, hearing things or not? Is she possessed or not? Like, it's sort of, it, to your point, Ryan, it went halfway on too many things.
Yeah, and because also, the daughter sort of shows up at the end, kind of again. Sorry, mm-hmm. The charge.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you're like, so is she a ghost speaking to her?
Right.
And like I was trying to say earlier, she was trying to get help from her dad to help her mom because her mom's crazy. So that's what she's trying to get help for. But then apparently comes back as a ghost potentially. And then as a ghost is like, now I'm on your side. I encourage you to do crazy things and kill people. Like,
right. What?
So is that real or not real? She was already, you know, mentally disturbed, as the poster indicated.
Yeah. I don't know. But yeah, it was too many things. And also, I don't know about you guys, but it took me 3 times to get through this. I was like out like a light every time it went on. I slept like a little peaceful baby 3 times.
This is a terrible story to share on a podcast, but I literally we were watching it in our bed, and we were turning it, and I looked at Erica, and Erica was like, make it whatever face you make to pretend you're asleep. That's the face she was making. And I started laughing because I was like, sure, good one. And then I realized, no, that was indeed her actual asleep face. And it looked like your silly face you'd make to pretend to be asleep. And I was like, oh no, oh no, you're actually asleep. So yes, it did take us a little bit of time to get through this one for Erica. I hated some of the music, and this is kind of hard because some of the music is effective. There's a song in particular in the cockroach scene, which is just like, it sounds like musical gibberish. Let's get to our favorite scene. Mark, what was your favorite scene?
Sickle in the mouth. Favorite scene.
Favorite scene, or just a scene you really liked? Which one is...
No, this was a favorite scene. Okay. It was my... If I looked at all the other scenes and had to pick one, that would be it. Hence, it being a favorite. So that was my favorite scene.
Okay. Ryan, what was your favorite scene?
I mean, the semantics there. I loved that. Anyways, My favorite scene is probably when Preacher Man is trying to get Crenshaw to go with him down to the tunnels, and Crenshaw reacts immediately abrasively and says, I ain't going down there with no crazy white lady. And it's the perfect, like, yeah, of course you would say that in that moment. And it was the most like realistic response in the entire film for me.
And that's a moment too, where like, if you saw that in a theater, like that would bring the house down.
Oh
like,
yeah. Oh yeah.
And in a movie, which, you know, doesn't have a lot of moments, is it going to bring the house down? But that moment would absolutely do it. Yeah. That's a great moment. Erica, what was your favorite scene?
The CPR scene.
So you dug this movie because that was a good fourth of the movie.
I was going to say, that was 17 minutes and you loved it.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
No, you got into it was the scene when we first see Lori and she has a little bunny rabbit. She has the little bunny rabbit on her bed and she's trying to tie like the ribbon around its neck, because it's the only time during this movie where I felt nervous and I felt like, ooh, what's going to happen? And I was like, and the lighting is sort of like this red lighting, and you're seeing Lori for the first time in her room, and you don't know if she's going to hurt the bunny or what she's doing. And she ends up all you see is that she's putting something around its neck. And it turns out that she's just tying a ribbon around its neck, but it just has this very eerie, like, oh, is she going to hurt this bunny? Like, what? You're not sure yet if she's good or bad. So that was actually my favorite scene, because it was truly the one time in this movie where I felt a little nervous and a little like confused in a good way. The rest of it, not so much, but you know, that one.
And for the record, it was an actual bunny, by the way.
Yeah,
it was.
It was a real bunny, right?
Oh, I got to rewind to that. To that scene.
Yeah, you need to take a look at that.
That's a bunny.
You need to do some research. You need to see that. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Ryan. Good to know. Okay.
Just replay that and pause it and then just really try to commit that to memory. Mm-hmm. My favorite scene, we already talked about it. It's when Crenshaw figures out on the toilet how Evelyn's been getting in and out of the room. So, I mean, look, there's, you know, any slasher movie, like, you know, Friday the 13th Part 5 with the enchiladas, you know, when there's a toilet scene in a slasher, I'm like, this just feels right. This feels good. How often do you see a scene like that? So it was very quick, but it's my favorite
scene. Not often enough.
Let's get into a couple final questions here. Are all motels death traps or just the ones in movies?
They probably all are. Are you speaking specifically about mountaintop motels?
All motels in general. Because I just can't remember a time I drove by a motel and I was like, that looks pretty like a sweet place to stay.
You know, when a tree falls on a road?
Yeah.
You've got six adults. You can fucking move that tree. I mean, Jesus Christ.
The storm, Mark. No, it's raining out.
No, wet.
They all were like, we can't move. We can't even get an ambulance because of the fucking tree. I'm like, go out there, get four people, two on each side, move the tree out of the way.
Mark.
It's not that heavy.
These are people in Louisiana. They don't know how to handle the rain.
And they're in white t-shirts.
Yeah, what guy has a snake bite on his face?
And, you know, that was one thing I wanted to point out. I've never heard anybody use the word snake bitten, and they say it like four times in this movie. I've never heard that as part of a vocabulary. Mm-hmm. It's bitten by a snake, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's a good point.
And I love that
he could have gone out and helped lift up the
log. I mean, your point is valid. Yes, he probably could, even if he's starting to hallucinate a little bit with the tree. He probably still could. Yeah.
Do you want to lay in this bed and die from being snake bitten, or do you want to help out?
Right.
Come on, Brett.
I love they call the doctor and they're like, "What's the problem?" He's like, "He's snake bit," and they're like, "Okay, we'll let him know." They're just so like casual about it. They're not like, "Oh, that's weird for a motel for that to happen." They're just like, "Sure, right, okay, well, we'll tell
again."
We'll
got it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway, if you own a motel, does that mean that you also have to be into taxidermy? Is it just like they go hand in hand?
Yeah.
If it's a remote motel, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
Definitely.
Yeah. Right.
Definitely.
Right.
Yeah.
Like a Motel 6 off a major highway, no.
Okay.
But on the top or near the top of a mountain or hilltop even, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
At one point early on, when Al meets them, he says to Prissy and Tanya, he says, "You kind of look like cousins." Couldn't that apply to anyone? I mean, like, you could look at two people and be like, "You kind of look like cousins," because you both look like you have two different parents. Like,
yeah,
yeah,
I mean, yeah. You answered your own question,
right?
There you go.
Now,
yeah,
Mark, you're my brother. Erica, you're my wife. If we were mm-hmm. like, "Hey, everybody, this is Ryan. He's our cousin." Everyone would be like, "Okay."
They'd be like, "Cool, nice to meet you, sure, man."
Sure.
Yeah. They'd be like, "If you recall,
I don't see a family resemblance, but you're cousins. We don't have to.
You're cousins.
You know? Yeah. We have the same name, so we're good. Yeah, we have to be related.
Yeah, that's you right. guys probably that's are right. cousins. Yeah.
Right. If you recall, right. Ryan, we did bring our friend Nate
yeah,
down
we
to
did.
A trip to Chicago uh-huh, one weekend uh-huh. and introduced him as our cousin right. to all of your friends. And we never corrected
nobody
it
ever made any ever. They were like,
okay. No one bat an eye. They were like, cool.
Yeah, yeah,
makes
this
sense.
Our cousin. Just, I think, to avoid even bothering to get into the story about how we knew, it was just like, just call you our cousin. It's easier. And everyone bought it. That's the thing. It just, if you yeah. say like, yeah, this is my cousin, they'd be like, sure.
Or conversely, being the asshole, like, we're cousins. I don't see it at all.
I don't see it.
Fucking prove it.
I don't see it.
No. No way. Impossible.
Show me the DNA.
First guys... cousin?
Show I don't
you
buy it.
You need to go on Ancestry.com right yeah. fucking now.
Let's see the family tree.
At all.
Get
Let's
on there.
The family tree.
Sign up. Sign up for a year. Let's it's a great it. Deal to do a year. It's better to pay a year in advance than to go monthly. Get it. Do the thing.
Also, they're running a BOGO, so one of you gets it for free. So this is totally worth it.
Send it to me. I would like to do it. I'll sign up.
My aggressive attitude was just so I could pitch.
I need somebody else
you guys.
To get this BOGO, and it's happening. Oh, God.
Shit, that's funny.
Speaking of Al, at the end, he admits that he's been lying. And then he and Tanya kiss. Do they get together in the end?
Yeah, for sure.
I buy it.
Yeah.
You know, so they've kind of been trauma bonded now.
What do you think, mm-hmm. Ryan?
I think from here, they have to go start their own record company. I mean, she's a decent mm-hmm. singer. Why not?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. She's mm-hmm. never,
she's a solo
never
act now,
anymore.
Though.
She's solo. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
She's a solo act, yes. I mean, I just...
She goes Tanya Mandrill.
I'm like, how did you two meet? Well, funny story. I lied to her and I told her I was a record producer. And then there were murders at this motel. And then I felt bad, so I decided to tell her the truth. And then she was like, okay, since we're about to die, I'll give you a kiss. And then, you know what? We started dating. I don't know.
Like, yeah.
That's not a great story. That's not a great story.
Kind of regret that I asked.
Oh, sorry. I'm going to go on to the next couple. Or are you two cousins? I don't know. So, hey, at the end of the movie, who turned on the vacancy sign at the end?
It was just on one of those auto ones that when the sun goes down, it kicks on the electricity.
It's on a timer.
Yeah, just a timer.
Yeah, by the way, they actually did put that sign up on the side of the road where they were shooting, and people did get confused. Probably number one, they're like, we're not on the mountaintop, but they were like, where's this motel you guys are talking about? Anyway, because they did really make that sign. And since we're already talking about stuff about the movie, let's get into some research. This is shot in two different stories I have. Shot in the fall of 1982, which is according to the production designer Drew Edward Hunter, who on the Blu-ray, he talks about shooting in the fall of 1982. But according to the article and the Shreveport Journal, they started shooting December 27th, 1982. They shot it in Shreveport and Caddo Parish, Louisiana, Jim McCullough Sr.'s wife was a school principal in Caddo Parish, so that's a place that they spent a lot of time. The primary location of the motel was actually an old fishing camp that was repurposed to look like motel rooms. It was abandoned at the time. And the cameraman, Joe Wilcots, he's the one who discovered it as they were driving by it. And he said, back up and take a look. Wilcots had actually been the DP for the original TV miniseries Roots and was brought from wherever, whatever city he was living in to come out, I think probably in LA. And he was brought out to be the DP. And he ends up working with the McCulloughs on several more movies, including The Aurora Encounter and maybe Video Murders as well. So so he continued to work there with them for a while. Filming ended sometime in late January 1983. The budget was supposedly less than $1 million. The McCulloughs opened the movie. They actually finished the movie and opened it and went around touring the movie. So it opens as early as I could see in July of 1983 at Oak Park Cinema. And they also, in 1984, they toured around as Horrors at Mountaintop Motel in Mississippi and Texas. And then in 1985 in Nashville, Georgia, some other places, it again is Mountaintop Motel again. But in 1985, that's when New World picks it up. I'm not sure when exactly in the year they did, but they finally do pick it up. And they release it around March 7th, 1986, in a bunch of different territories, Oklahoma, Virginia, Texas. Eventually, Mountaintop Motel Massacre opens in New York on May 16th, 1986. And that's the same day New World released No Retreat, No Surrender in New York City as well. It's then eventually released that same year, 1986, in September, by New World Video for the low, low price of $69.95. Here are the other movies that they were releasing. They were releasing The Rotation Diet. That was a Learning Corporation of America title.
Oh.
Yeah. The Rotation Diet, which was based on a hot book at the time about a diet. And we'll eventually be digging into that one. Will we take the rotation diet for a couple weeks just to be able to talk about it? I say yes.
I'm looking it up right now so I can get a jump start on it.
Oh, man.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
All right.
Also, Jake Speed. The Incredible Jake Speed comes out on New World Video. The Incredible Sarah is also released. Ghost Keeper is also released that at the same time, and Agent on Ice, which,
wow.
It's like, is he like on ice, like he's dead, or that he's just like on like a frozen lake?
I don't know. I do have the VHS, but I think it's more like a kind of a James Bond kind of riff. So
I heard he died and they were keeping the organs fresh for 14 other bodies to receive them.
fair. Wow.
Yeah.
I'm excited to watch that one.
That's the rotation diet. That's the rotation diet. You just give one of your organs to someone else.
Ooh. Rotate along to the next individual.
This liver's not doing me any good. You can take it. All right.
During the first 3 days of the rotation diet, according to the author, a person should not exceed 600 calories per day, and meals consist of a breakfast of a half a grapefruit and a slice of whole wheat bread and cheese.
Okay.
So just a little preview for what for our
man
our rotation diet episode.
God, that's feels like a lot. Okay, well, but I wanted to talk about it because just real briefly to end, this is like in an era, 1986, where New World is looking for more cheaper and cheaper films to pick up. When we spoke to New World editors, Kevin Sewelson and Dave Parker, they sort of told us it was almost all pickups because they released a lot of movies every year and they were picking up movies because in 1985, of course, that's when New World Video starts. And New World Video is a huge success. And just in telling how much of a success New World Video was, I found this article in the August 1986 issue of Billboard, in which a lot of companies were basically saying, congratulations, New World Video, on all your success. And here's what they said. In 1985, New World Video released 43 titles and grossed $41 million in the U.S. and Canada. In 1986, 68 pieces of product will be released, along with 12 additional titles put out under the LCA line, which we learned from our For Safety's Sake episode that New World had bought the Learning Corporation of America, which was a new company under the New World umbrella. Most of the New World video releases will be high concept features geared towards a youthful audience, though they also had a new joint venture with Film Dallas. Film Dallas was how New World was going to get into classy independent movies. We've already discussed Night Zoo, which was a French-Canadian pickup that they got. We're still talking about Night Zoo. That's right. At the time, they were a big, huge company because they had put out Kiss the Spider-Woman and Trip to Bountiful, which both had been nominated for Academy Awards. So that was their other demographics. LCA was releasing entertainment, family-oriented, educational fare. The point being, $41 million in 1985. They were, in 1986, just cooking with money and were like, hey, at that point in time, they're also getting the Balcor film investors. That's where people were buying, were able to invest and like buy part to buy into. They're trying to raise, like, I think it was something like $50 million. We talked about some of the movies that were funded through that. I think that was Pretty Smart and a few other movies, maybe Wanted Dead or Alive. And they were just getting private investors to invest money. And then New World Video was just going gangbusters. So they were just buying up companies. In 1987, they bought Marvel Comics, so on and so forth. So they were just like making all this money and being like, woohoo! And as Dave and Kevin told us, they just felt like there was money everywhere. And then until all of a sudden, there wasn't any money at all. And all of a sudden, it was all over. But this was at a time where they were like, let's grab it. Let's grab anything. So I have to think that they grabbed Aurora Encounter. And then they said, oh, you have another movie too? This slasher movie? Great. Let's see it. Because they were just, we're going to put out 68 pieces of product in 1986. So they were like, let's do it. Anyway, that's it. That is Mountaintop Motel Massacre. Ryan, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. I feel like I was a little quiet, but I mean, mostly I was just in awe of like all the friends that I've been listening to for years. You guys are amazing. Happy to be here. Happy to be here on such a monumental film that, you know, pretended to be a 70s film in the 80s and did it in a way.
Yeah. Oh, it definitely had those 70s vibes, you know. Ryan, we so appreciate you being here. Thank you for being here. Thank you for Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network, because we are now a part of it, and we're so thrilled to be a part of it.
Yes,
and so
thrilled to have you here.
Hopefully you don't mind coming back and you know, keeping us on task. And I'm sure you've been tallying a lot of all the numbers as the boss and just kind of making sure that we're all on task, giving all of our information over to HR. And
the honor is all mine, but just so you know, the warning last week, it was serious. I need you to keep that in mind. Try to keep the swears to a minimum and the semantics down accurately.
That's fair.
I think we can
That's
meet fair. You halfway on that. I
mean, by the way, Mark, see you on Thursday.
Thank you. I'll see you then. Yeah. Yeah.
Semantically, we're one third great in that department, but it's just the other two thirds, just not so good. Well, thank you so much for being here. And you can listen to Ryan's show and our show and a whole bunch of other shows on Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Please join us for more December 2, Sleigh Bells Ring, and as we talk about more slasher movies for the holidays. We'll see you next time on the New World Pictures Podcast. Bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening. To hear more shows from the Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network, please select the link in the description